Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello friends, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Before we get into today's episode, we wanted to let you know about Monkey Tennis Live. It's our first live event happening at the Prince Charles Cinema in Leicester Square in London on Thursday, November the 24th. We're going to be dissecting, celebrating and discussing Alpha Papa, the Alan Partridge film, and a live podcast recording, and you're all invited. You can get details at postpoppodcasts.com/monkeytennis. We hope as many of you can make it as possible, as well as talking about Alpha Papa. We're also going to play the biggest ever game of Cards Against Alanity, and one of you will win a signed On The Hour box set where Alan first appeared, signed by Mr. Chris Morris. So we're very excited about that, and we hope you can make it. postpoppodcasts.com/monkeytennis. That's also the place to go to check out our new merch. We've had a snazzy t-shirt made, and it's going to be available for a limited period only. So check it out, postpoppodcasts.com/monkeytennis.
This episode of Monkey Tennis is brought to you by Meteor Productions. You watched and loved Titsnade Zoo, Boob Olympics, and the Eurovision Thong Contest. Now, prepare yourself for the biggest thrill ride this side of the Autobahn as we bring you Crash Bang Wallop, What a Video. Featuring Norwich media mogul Alan Partridge. You've never seen idiots driving like maniacs into Berks like this before.
Monkey tennis?
Damn!
Monkey tennis?
Little piece my foot of a spine.
Monkey tennis?
Go to London, I guarantee you'll either be mugged or not appreciated.
Monkey tennis?
Damn!
Monkey tennis?
On the whole, a very good effort, 7-10.
It's hotter than the sun!
Back of the net.
Monkey tennis?
Crash! Bang! Wallop! What a podcast. Welcome to Series 2 of Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast. Every week we take a look at a different episode of Sir Alan Gordon Partridge's work. He hasn't been knighted. My name is Adam Brooks, and joining me is Tom Dark.
Mine's a pint.
Nick Older.
Sure for Teddy.
And Tom Stab.
He thinks he's Rod Stewart.
So we're starting with episode 1 of series 2 of I'm Alan Partridge, The Talented Mr. Alan, described on the DVD menu thusly. At the petrol station, Alan bumps into his old teacher Frank Sweaty Raphael, who once caned Alan for having a chalk penis drawn on his blazer, and agrees to do a presentation at his alma mater. Before we get into the episode itself, we should talk a little bit about where Alan's at in series 2 versus series 1. Anyone want to kick us off?
Well, essentially, he's living in a static caravan and he's had a massive mental breakdown.
Yeah.
Pretty much what's happened.
Almost, I feel like almost more's happened between series one and series two of I, Man and Partridge than between knowing me, knowing you and series one, apart from that a man died then.
Yeah, I think you're right, but it's all in the kind of the subtext and background, which you learn more as the series continues, I guess.
They never actually talk about what date it is or what, you know, time frame sort of thing. So obviously the end of series one, that was 1997, and this went out in 2002. So that's pretty, and looking at the dates, it's pretty much exactly 5 years. And when you see Alan for the first time, obviously they've put some prosthetics up to make him look a little bit older. And it is quite, like, the first time you see him, he's like, oh God, he looks like he's aged.
He's the oldest he's ever looked here.
Do you think a lot of it is just loose skin though? Because he did put on a lot of Toblerone weight and then took it off again.
Yeah, there's some slack.
I do remember watching this episode for the first time and just thinking that they had aged him too much. Yeah. And I still think, looking back now, there's too much makeup. It looks a bit ridiculous, I think. Yeah. In particular, the so in each episode in this series, they have a little bit at the end of the credits where there's like a random quote, which is an offcut from something. And I just think, so in episode one, you just have them go, see you later. But if you look at that specifically, the amount of makeup and like the crow's feet they put on, it's ridiculous. He looks like he's about 60.
And when you contrast that with how he looks in Alpha Papa, he looks like 15 years younger than he does now.
It is a bit inconsistent.
Yeah. Although it does say that he obviously does go on to say that he was repellent to women for 2 years. So maybe
he had boobs.
So other things that have happened, he's triumphed over Dave Clifton at Radio Norwich in that he's now got the better slot. We'll get into that in a bit more detail later on. Lynn's mum is dead. That's happened.
R.I.P.
Yep. Which did make me think she's perhaps only slightly, less financially dependent on Alan because her mother's money's coming through.
She's getting her hair done, etc.
A couple of random bits about the series as a whole. The working title for the series was I'm Still Alan Partridge, but they bottled on calling it that. And there was an idea that they were going to set it in a former mansion that had been converted into flats with only Alan and an airline pilot living there.
I think one of the reasons they didn't go ahead with that because they realised there just wouldn't be enough other regular characters in it because no one else lives there.
Yeah.
It's a great comedy setup, really, isn't it? It's enclosed spaces. There's lots of people coming and going. It's, I think, out of those two choices, they clearly picked the right one.
I think so, yes. I was going to discussing the Partridge aging and the makeup stuff. I actually found quite an interesting quote from Coogan, which kind of refers to this, in 2013, where he said, I'm surprised Alan's lasted this long. Playing him now feels different, more natural. He's supposed to be about 10 years older than me, but we're both middle-aged now. I'm 47. I started playing him when I was 26. Far too young to be playing a slightly old fogey character. Looking back at the old shows, it looks a bit odd. I used to wear makeup to give myself crow's feet. Now God has lavished crow's feet on me in abundance. So at least, Coogan kind of agreeing with us there that the makeup was a bit OTT in those series.
Also worth noting that he's driving a Lexus now. He's got the static caravan and he's building his own home.
Yeah. He sort of has bounced back.
I think so.
I mean, I've got a note here saying he has bounced back to an extent. Probably not enough to write a book, though. It doesn't justify an autobiography, does it?
I mean, you've got to think he is getting his own 5-bedroomed house built from scratch. So he's got to be doing quite well, but I don't think that's from the book sales.
I was going to say, it's probably a bit premature, and we can come on to this later, but where's that money coming from?
Well, yeah, there is... good question. Can't think which episode it is off the top of my head. I think it might be the one with Dan in, where he mentions as he's leaving the BP garage that he's on a 6-figure income.
Yeah.
At local radio.
Yeah, or for Skirmish.
Yeah.
Combine
remember
the two?
Those 8,000 viewers. Really just pay his way.
Just before we get onto the episode proper, I feel like we all need to pay tribute in some form to the DVD menu on this
yes,
thing.
I would say it's probably the best DVD menu of all time. It's fantastic.
Yep. For those of you who are of the internet age and don't have the DVD,
Or VHS age.
It's basically Alan doing air bass, I guess, or air guitar.
Yeah. It's a bass guitar.
Yep. You can sort of revolve around him. It revolves, but he doesn't
evolve.
There's a very short excerpt of the menu on our Facebook page, but it might be on YouTube because it is widely regarded as a very good DVD menu. So
it's lovely
seek
stuff.
It out.
So onto the episode itself, a strong opening. He's in a crimson polo neck. There was a bit of info in the director's commentary that they tried to dress him. They tried to get inspiration from people who wear suits all the time and therefore don't know how to dress leisurely at the weekend. So bad sportswear.
It most of the clothes that he's wearing in this series, though, look so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Like, everything that he's put in, first off, obviously isn't very stylish, but just looks uncomfortable and hot and sweaty and horrible.
Well, he seems to favour a polo neck underneath a shirt, strong on the long sleeve double layers.
Yep.
Not something I'd go for.
So he gets through an insane amount of polo necks in this series. I didn't keep an exact count, but there's several of them. It's his main fashion go-to.
I feel like they were never fashionable. I remember I wore one once in the 90s. I'm
pretty
never
sure
again.
They were available in Foster's menswear, but let's not go over that again.
Call back to series one there.
Yeah, we've done that enough.
I think it's a great opener. He's taking calls. He's got an idiot on the line who's saying, oh, there's lots of young boys killing a fat boy. It's not as good as Gandalf with a long beard. From that, you would never guess the punchline, would you?
No. It's very smart. It's so good.
Yeah. So he's obviously asking who's the best lord. Lord of the Dance, Lord of the Rings, Lord of the Flies. And Michael Flatley takes it, I think.
Who is the best lord, though?
Good question. I'm going rings.
Of those three, I'd go flies.
I'd go flies.
Yeah.
Sorry, Stab.
So flies wins here, but Michael Flatley won.
The blouse wearing tycoon, Michael Flatley.
To be honest, I don't river dance.
I hadn't watched this series in quite a while, and obviously re-watching it to kind of swat up a little bit for this. The canned laughter jumped out at me straight away with this. I don't know if anyone has any.
Everyone
objection. Objections to that, because it's not canned laughter. Canned laughter would be fake and added onto the audio track.
It's not canned laughter, and I can tell you that because I was in the audience for some of this series, which we will get onto.
Okay,
in
if you're going to be a pedant, the laughter to me was at odds, and I found a little bit jarring.
I would agree with that, and I think it just seems a bit more noticeable in this series compared to the previous one, because it is there on both. So whether it's just louder.
I don't know if that's kind of in keeping with the style of each series. So the first series seemed a little bit more fly on the wall kind of documentary, whereas this one is more straightforward sitcom, I think.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe there was, and also it was popular as well. So there were more people, probably a bigger audience, just generally more people there. So it was probably more.
Well, I remember Amanda Iannucci having to almost kind of defend the laughter track on the series because it was that much more noticeable. So I have some quotes from what he said here back in 2002.
Hit us with those quotes.
Which found on the BBC website. So in an interview with Nicky Campbell on Radio 5 Live, Armando said, "It's not canned laughter. We recorded it in front of the studio audience. If anything, I tried to tone it down. If Steve blows his nose, there's a round of applause. I can't say, can you not laugh at this or can you laugh a little bit less at that? The first series also had laughter as well."
Basically, he's saying we're brilliant.
At this point, can I
think it's too much laughing.
Can I issue a formal apology as a former audience member to Armando Iannucci for finding his sitcom funny?
Yes. The rest of this says, Iannucci identified comparisons with The Office, which was shown prior to I'm Alan Partridge, to point out their differences. He said, if we wanted to make The Office, we would have made another series of The Office, but it's a different world. The Office is very real, whereas Alan is very grotesque. Steve calls him uber real. He is not someone we all know and can identify with in the same way you can with Brent. Maybe following on from The Office, people are expecting more of the same, but there is a laughter track on Blackadder, Morecambe and Wise. They weren't spoiled by the intrusive inclusion of a laughter track.
It's interesting that he has to defend it, because think that you wouldn't, because it's funny and it's real people, so what's the issue?
It was definitely the status quo back then, because The Office was pretty new, so you hadn't seen many sitcoms that didn't have.
He had to defend it again when he was in conversation with Steve Coogan for The Guardian, I think a year or two ago as well, where one of the audience questions was, why did you choose to use canned laughter? And that guy got killed.
So maybe he was kind of possibly a little bit on the defensive off the back of the success of The Office and all the plaudits that
I think
was
that's
getting.
It, because you have that semi-real style, but I think The Office is on kind of one end of the spectrum, Partridge on the other. Also, I just think it is much more noticeable compared to Series 1. So obviously it became a bit of a talking point, like back when this series first came out.
Mm. So then we get one of the things that repeats quite a bit through this series, which is Alan making a joke, but then having to explain it. Flatly, my dear, I don't river dance. And he goes, give a damn. and then he says, it's 11 p.m, which is when you know that his slot, he's been promoted.
He's bounced back. In a way.
He has. Although across different episodes, it seems that his show ends at either 11 p.m. or midnight. It's not the same time every night.
I was trying to work this out. I think the show he's doing is 10 till midnight.
Usually, but he says it's 11 p.m. Oh, that's before the credits, and then after the credits, it's later when he's handing over to Dave Clifton.
So I think we can assume that Alan is now doing 10 to midnight, which is much better than the graveyard shift, but now that means Clifton is on the graveyard shift. And there is a reference to...
Oh, yeah, it's Clifton's fictional nightclub, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
I would definitely go to Clifton's fictional nightclub.
The bar would never run out, would it?
No.
Well, it might do, because Clifton is drunk.
Oh, yeah, good point.
So I think we can assume that Clifton is doing midnight to 4 a.m.
Oh, 4 hours.
Yeah, 4 hours of radio with that man.
Just to go back to the laughter thing for a second, whilst I think it's good that it's a live studio audience, I think that's better. There are a few occasions where the laugh actually drowns out the next line of dialogue.
Yes. Yeah.
There's a bit here where Dave replies, Alan's saying about Dave's, the women in Dave's fictional nightclub, I can hear them, I can't see them. And then Dave actually says, yeah, that's because you're not in my room. Which admittedly is not a zinger, but I had to look it up in the script because the laughter drowned it out.
I mean, maybe it's simply just the audio mix of this series is a bit different, and they've literally just pumped it up a little bit compared to what it's like. Because I also kind of noted that there are a few points where there are words or kind of end of lines which I didn't quite capture first time around.
Or they prepare themselves for the fact that there will be applause and laughter, so they kind of stall continuing with the conversation, which is something you see quite a bit in sitcoms.
Yeah. Also, with Clifton in this first exchange, did anybody notice that there are empty takeaway cartons in front of him?
I did not know.
No, I didn't either. Yes.
Looks like it's some kind of Chinese takeaway.
It is.
Also, he drinks a can of something, but you can't tell if it's beer or Coke or something because he's covering it with his hand.
On the commentary, they say that he is living at this point on Chinese takeaway and fizzy drinks. You're bang right.
The smell of that room.
Yeah. Oh, lovely stuff. Because it looked to me like he's deliberately covering the brand on the can of drink. So whether it was just they couldn't show a can of Coke or they wanted it to be ambiguous whether it was beer or
Coke. That brings up an interesting point, actually, that I was going to raise later. There are a few occasions throughout this series where Alan or somebody names a brand.
Yeah.
And have you noticed that it seems that he deliberately mispronounces the name of the brand?
Yeah.
So that he's not actually saying the brand name, he's saying something very similar.
Yeah,
everything but Coleman.
Strawberry Nesquik.
Yeah, Nesquik. Yeah, exactly. There's a couple. There's
what
a couple
about
like
Lucozade and didn't he say Dr Pepper at one point as well?
No.
Yes, he does. Well no, someone
does.
Yeah, but
yeah, I know. Well,
maybe there are some that they can get away with, but there are some that they have to.
Maybe they need clearance for it. Yeah,
it's either that or it's a mistake. I think.
Or he's purposefully getting it wrong for the purposes of a joke.
Maybe.
Possibly.
Mm.
Build.
We'll never know. After the exchange between Alan and Clifton, we are back to the BP garage.
We are. Michael is there.
Can we please first speculate on the circumstances as to how Michael got fired from the Travel Tavern?
Well, he's obviously... Because the Travel Tavern is Linton, obviously, but this is... The BP garage is Norwich, isn't it? So has he followed Alan, basically?
I don't think I don't know that he's that led by Alan. I think the boring truth is that he probably just had a series of misdemeanors at the Travel Tavern, drunk for work, abusive,
hand in the till,
hand
surely.
Maybe hand in the till.
Going behind reception.
Well, we know
he's not allowed to do that.
We know for a fact that he's not allowed to handle money, and I wonder if that is a nod to the fact that...
But now he's working a BP garage.
Well, I'm coming on to that. Oh, so I'm thinking that he was fired for hand in the till, stealing money... And that's why Alan says that he knows for a fact he's not allowed to handle money. But he's clearly pulled the wool over British Petroleum's eyes and is very much handling money on a day-to-day basis.
This is it's an interesting point, though, because before I went back to watch this series, I was thinking, is it the same BP garage that Alan visits in Series 1? It is not.
It doesn't look like it.
No, it's not. Like I've checked how they look. They are different. It's a bit unclear in this series. Where is Alan actually living? Is he living in Norwich? Is he living in Linton? Because he did like the fact it was equidistant between Norwich and London.
He's very, very anti-London in this series.
I think it's Norwich.
He ramps it up, doesn't he?
Yeah. This is a fact for later, really, but Simon Greenall, that plays Michael, actually did some white-collar boxing in between episodes of I, Man and Partridge. So you'll notice in a later episode that his nose is visibly broken.
Oh, really?
That's, yeah, wow. And he had a black eye, which he was actually, he was in the director's commentary. It's him, Peter Bainham, Felicity Montague and Armando Iannucci, amongst other people. And they basically make fun of the fact that that was actually a breach of contract that they let him get away with. He's not allowed to put himself in jeopardy while filming.
Does anybody know where the real location of this BP garage is?
No.
I don't. I know this is a set. The interior is a set, obviously, but I don't know where the outside...
The actual garage location is Staines Road East, Sunbury-on-Thames, opposite Kempton Park Racecourse. So we could go and visit one day, maybe.
Expect a pilgrimage of Partridge fans in the near future.
The Monkey Tennis fan podcast tour.
We could do that.
Also, all the snacks in that garage were real, and between takes, the cast would eat them.
Well, you would, wouldn't you?
Why not? Why not if it's there? I didn't notice that there are boxes of Persil behind Michael as well, which I thought was quite an odd odd thing to have for sale in a garage. Anybody else think that?
I also noticed above the fizzy drinks, it says batteries, and there are batteries behind Michael with no signage promoting those batteries.
They've left him in charge of display.
Do you think Michael's put the wrong signs in the wrong place?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
My question to the group is, Michael working behind the desk in a BP garage, is this a step up or a step down for Michael versus travel?
Great question. I feel at best it's a sideways move.
Well, to be honest, he's got more responsibility, hasn't he?
Yeah.
So maybe it's a step up.
Well, he's left in charge of that place on his own a lot.
Personally, I think it's not a promotion, it's not a demotion, it's a motion, isn't it?
he has moved in a way.
I'd go for BP over Linton, I think. Linton looks like quite manual labour. This looks like, you know,
sit around, read the paper, chat to your mate.
Yeah. Piper Pringles.
Fair enough. There's more locations in this series as well, I think, than the previous one. You've also got the BP garage, you've got Choristers, you've got the caravan and the unfinished house and the radio station are your main ports of call.
Yeah.
That's one more, isn't it?
Don't know.
Slightly bigger budget.
Yeah.
More scope.
Definitely
more characters, more regular characters as well.
Yeah. I don't know where that budget went, though, apart from maybe Coogan's makeup.
I like that Alan has obviously encouraged Michael to stock not only his book, but also Crash Bang Wallop What a Video in the BP
must
garage.
Must be breaching some kind of head office ruling around what they can and can't stock.
Unless if he's done a deal with all BP garages to stock both those items, which I find highly
just
unlikely.
In the Norwich area.
It also hit me with a lot of nostalgia seeing Crash Bang Wallop What a Video of all of those sort of Danny Baker's own golden style VHS.
Clips of idiots driving cars like maniacs into Berks.
Exactly that.
Love that.
Yeah.
They talk about, in this scene, they talk about the fact the video is selling better than the book. And Michael says they've sold 3 copies of the video, which implies they've sold at most 2 copies of the book. But also, there is a deleted scene from this series where Lynn's talking to Alan and she says, I spoke to the publishers yesterday and they sold 4 books in the last month. So I think, do we assume that Bouncing Back has maybe sold a grand total of 6 copies?
I would have thought so. I mean, also they do reveal in the final episode how many copies are being pulped, but we'll save that for later.
Yeah.
It's significantly more than 6. Put it that way. Shaken Stevens gets quoted, which I believe is the first reference to a minor celebrity in this series.
Series one
was peppered with them: Sue Cook, Bill Oddie, etc., etc.
But I do believe Bill Oddie... Does Bill Oddie make a return this season?
He does.
Well, we'll come to that.
Yes, we
will. Certainly gets less coverage this time.
I did enjoy this scene when Alan's kind of asking Michael for his sales pitch and Michael describes it as, he's coming back a bit.
Yeah.
But Michael's always putting Alan down in like a really subtle way that like Alan never realises. It's brilliant.
Yeah,
it's very funny.
Some other facts from the commentary just that I'll throw in at this point. There was a theory amongst Amanda Iannucci and the other writers that Michael had actually never been in the army, which I thought was quite good.
What's he just lying about?
He's just a sort
or
of deranged
in the TA?
Enthusiast.
Yeah, he's the Gareth character, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, there's no proof, is there, at any point? The house that Alan is building did actually obviously become someone's house. It was genuinely being built for a person.
Amazing.
At the time.
Yeah, where's that? Yeah. That's what we need to know.
Yeah. I'm not sure.
That's the Partridge pilgrimage we need to make.
Yeah. Felicity Montague, who plays Lynn, tried to stop Lynn's mum from being dead. She thought it was a step too far, too cruel. And also, it's revealed...
It was her time to go.
Yeah. It's revealed in the commentary. We talked a bit in series one about how long Lynn and Alan have been acquainted when he became her PA. She became his PA, sorry. It turns out from the commentary that she used to babysit him. Lynn was Alan's babysitter at one point.
One origin story.
Yeah,
that would be amazing.
We need to get into Alan and Lynn origins.
Does that work in terms of ages? That seems a bit odd.
Well, didn't we say in series one that we thought she was... No, he was 23.
He was 23 when in 1977.
When they were with Chris Feather.
Yes.
I feel like the age difference is probably... It can't be much, can it?
Well, she's his tireless PA, 50.
What's the biggest gap you've ever had between you and a babysitter? I don't know, the smallest gap.
I don't remember.
I think my youngest babysitter was probably still like 5 or 6 years older than me.
So what, when you were 16, she was...
Off to bed, Adam.
You've done me there.
Yeah, I think the ages work.
Let's just say it works because none of us can be bothered to figure it out.
But that means she's seen a lot of things that...
Oh, yeah. She's got the intel.
Did anybody notice in this first BP scene, that some of the camera work is a bit wobbly? So again, it's kind of creating a bit of a weird semi-fly-on-the-wall documentary feel again. If you go back and look at this, the camera shots aren't static. There's slight movement to them. And it's weird that some scenes have that and some scenes don't. And I don't understand why they've chosen to do it like that.
No, I'm not sure.
Inconsistent.
Is it split between the exterior scenes that are wobbly and the interior?
No, this is just like within the garage itself.
A mystery that may never be solved.
Yeah, well, it just feels like there are points throughout the series when some of the scenes are filmed like that. Mm. And again, I think you have a few scenes like that in the first series as well. So it's always that weird mix between it trying to appear a bit like it's a fly-on-the-wall documentary and also just a straight-up sitcom, I feel. Yeah.
Odd. So yeah, Michael, as you said, indirectly slates Alan. He wasn't very good, and he says like he'll never get back to where he was. Them days is over. Like, my accent's terrible. Sorry. Alan sings to himself for the first time this series. It was in every episode of series one. This time it's Enya. I wondered, Dark, as a music industry veteran, whether you've got any good Enya anecdotes
sail
for us.
Sail away. No, but she's sold a lot of records. So
she certainly has. She's got a castle, hasn't she?
Records or one song.
She has sold millions and millions of albums.
Put it this way, there's a reason that Tom Dark has a second phone.
Thank you very much.
Enya bought it for him as a gift.
Yes, she does own her own castle.
I notice at this point, Alan is wearing his own signature jacket.
I do also like on the Enya thing that Alan did feel the need to clarify that he wasn't Enya, just in case anyone wasn't sure. Like,
from a distance, maybe. Yeah. So at this point, sweaty Raphael...
Khaki Raphael.
He's both his old teacher enters. The guy who plays him, Andrew Burt, is the guy who started the war in the day-to-day. And he also hands over the check to Alan in the comic relief Alan Partridge sketch.
Supplementary facts. He also provides, the actor, Andrew Burt, provides all the Radio Norwich voiceovers as well.
Yep. I was going to drop that as a fact bomb.
I've got a further fact bomb, which is that he was also in Emmerdale at the same time as Ian Sharrock, who played Jed Maxwell in Series 1.
Oh, crossover.
Acting buddies.
Brilliant. Yeah. Bosh. Brilliant.
Another fact. Would
anybody like an Enya fact, just because I've managed to get the internet working?
Go on then.
Enya is the richest female singer with a fortune of 91 million.
How old is that fact, though?
Surely Adele is past that now.
That's the 2016 Sunday Times Rich List. So that is Britain and Ireland. Oh. But yeah.
A lot of records.
Mate. That's
crazy.
A lot
of records.
is she Irish?
I feel
like we're spending a lot of time on Enya.
Yeah, let's move on.
Save it for the Enya podcast.
coming soon.
Frank Raphael, sail away with me, the Enya podcast. Frank Raphael, a.k.a. Sweaty Raphael, a.k.a. Khaki Raphael.
Who smells like a zoo.
Yeah.
Does anyone... I feel like I've never heard that as a put down.
No, but I've smelt people that smell like a zoo, absolutely.
Crusties.
This made me think of...
I have heard someone's bedroom described as smelling like a farmyard as well.
Yeah.
I think that's what he's going for.
Yeah.
It was Nick's.
The puerile nature of the insult, the childhood insult, made me think, can you remember any really basic, terrible insults you used to have for teachers at school? We had one whose surname I will leave. Yeah. He never taught me, but he was very sweaty, and like Sweaty Raphael. And we called him, Hideous Sweaty, insert surname. Which seems unfair. Sweaty's bad enough. Add hideous.
Hideous.
Hideous, sweaty.
Well, you gave him the name.
I didn't come up with it.
Oh, you say that now.
You enjoyed it, though, didn't you?
We know that's typical of the kind of nicknames people's teachers get at primary school.
We did have a teacher at our school, and everyone's convinced that he wore a toupee, so his name was Wiggy.
Oh, that's pretty good.
You can see how they came up with that.
Kids can be so cruel.
They really can.
Anything from the private sector, Stab? Obviously, you were kind of educated private.
The only one I can think of, and I won't say the teacher's name, but people just called him...
Was that... We won't ask why. It's probably best we leave it there.
Work it out yourself.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
to be clear, the anything that was discussed, it turned out to be 100% false.
Oh, good.
We've cleared his name, even though we haven't named him.
Yeah.
Did anybody think when Khaki / Sweaty Raphael goes for the minstrels and Alan goes says Bragg of Minstrel, ooh, is that a bit of a callback to All Mints?
I don't think it is. I just think it's just a stupid gag that's hilarious.
Yeah,
I
mean, does he think minstrels are an effeminate snack? Then is that what he's trying to say?
Well, I don't know. I just thought you've got mints. No, I think mints, they over... minstrels. He basically does the exact same ooh for Camp David that he did previously.
I think minstrels as a genre of chocolate definitely over-index against women. Probably in the same camp as your Malteser, your minstrel. Revel, I feel, skews a little bit more male.
Yeah, because you can play Revel Roulette, can't you?
So. Yeah, and that is definitely a man's game.
I mean, obviously, on the far end of the spectrum, you've got your Yorkie and Double Decker.
More to come from this on Prose and Confectionery, Nick Holder's new podcast about sweets.
A lot of Partridge is quite chocolate-based, though, so it's a valid discussion. Yeah,
we'll come back to it.
There's a deep chocolate vein running through Alan. Yeah. He's describing people at the BBC, I think, and Frank Raphael's describing the teaching profession as being full of unpleasant people, bitter bastards. I love Alan's choice of swear words in front of Raphael. He could say anything now that they're both grown-ups, but he chooses big balls and fanny hair.
He also says to Sweaty Raphael that he has the third best slot on Radio Norwich. So what do we think are the slots one and two? What are the two
to
best?
To start with, I don't think that's true. Because there have to be at least three daytime slots that have more listeners are better.
Well, I mean, I'm assuming Alan is thinking the main breakfast show and the drive time show are the two key slots ahead of him.
Yes.
And having listened to the audiobook in preparation for this, he does ram home that point at least twice in this section that it is the third most popular.
Consistent, if anything.
So there's lots of relatable bits here when he's talking about how he got caned for trying to... allegedly drawing a chalk penis on someone's back. That was very reminiscent to me of, I don't know if this is true of anyone else, do you find that you end up hanging on to your school injustices a bit? I got marked down for a bit of coursework once and I'm still bitter to this day.
No, I've let it go.
I've moved on.
No, I'm still a bit bitter about the fact that someone at my school, I got in trouble for peeing up against a wall outside and it was not me. And I'm not happy
about it. What did the teacher do about that?
Just kept himself to himself. He was very quiet.
Oh, dear. They often are quiet, aren't they?
Yeah, they're the quiet ones.
I really think we should move on.
Okay.
I also kind of, well, I guess sort of moving on to that theme, Rolf Harris was described as bouncing back in this episode.
Yeah. Yes, he was.
He's not bouncing back now, is he?
Yeah. Also, again, from the audiobook, he also has a little bit of a chat about Jimmy Savile as well. So
yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Covering them all off.
Yeah, lovely stuff.
Should we
move on?
Sure. Yeah. So Frank Raphael mentions to Alan that Tony Spillane came to give a talk to their sixth formers. Now, I looked up a Tony Spillane online. He is the regional vice president for a payments software company, but sadly educated in Cork, not in Norwich.
I just feel like if you were going to make up a surname, why go for something like Spillane, a name that no one's ever heard of? Wouldn't you just say Tom Smith?
Who's Tom Smith?
Don't know.
I've got a mate called Tom Smith.
Have you?
Hi, Tom.
Hi, mate.
Alan,
we're chit-chatting.
Alan literally describes Michael to Frank as the work Geordie.
I mean, he is.
Yeah. At this point, Alan forces Frank Raphael to give him a talk at the school, and 7 minutes in, enter Lynn for the first time. Lynn's back.
Yep.
And would everybody agree that Lynn is wearing a very snazzy cardigan?
Yes, yeah. And he describes it as snazzy. He also describes her hair as snazzy. I was surprised he's opened with so many compliments.
I would also describe Lynn's hair as highly flammable. It looks like that would go up at the drop of a hat.
It looks like Nan's hair.
She looks bad.
So yeah, there's a couple of compliments towards Lynn, but it's not long before he gets back to his old ways, calling her dead mum a heffalump and a big woman. a joke that's sort of repeated in the Alpha Papa film when Cole Meany's character, Pat, is talking about his dead wife, saying she's with the angels. She's been lifted up to the angels now. And Tim Key says, psychic Simon says, well, there must have been a lot of them. Alan also says about Lynn's mum, I'm tempted to say she was big-hearted, but that would be bullshit.
Yeah, that got a massive laugh from me.
That is a great line.
Hilarious.
In this scene, do you notice, so this is obviously the first time we're in a static home, there are photos of Alan, photos of himself on the walls.
Professionally taken as well, just like
snapshots. They're his Radio Norwich press shots, basically, up in his own home.
Nothing of Sonia And I don't think there's anything of Fernando and Denise, is there?
No, of course not.
Of course not. Lynn also seems to get less screen time this series, but more development. You know, there's as we'll find out later, there's a man on the scene. There's the bereavement of her after her mum died.
I think the relationship between Alan and Lynn is quite different in this series, but something we can discuss over the next few episodes, I'm sure.
Yep. She also had a hip replacement, I forgot to mention that, off her mum's money, which is lucky because she's still doing Alan's heavy lifting, changing gas canisters and so on at the static home.
He heard her clinking.
Yep. He also says to her at some point, she's like, oh, do you need me here? Do you need me there? He's like, I don't need you anywhere. He absolutely does.
He does. Also, what I like from this scene, this is where we learn what Lynn's salary is. It's £8,000 a year.
I also looked up the average national salary for this point in time, which was in 2003, it was £18,200, meaning Lynn is earning 43% of the average national salary.
And we are to assume that this is a full-time job with unsociable hours and that absolutely. She's on call 24/7 for Alan.
Yeah, absolutely.
Christmas Day?
If needed. If he's burned a sprout or something. Yeah. We also get another glimpse at Alan's car. I've obviously jotted down the registration plate. It's a Lexus IS Saloon. And I've looked up the price and it's worth...
Surely make some kind of quiz of that.
Come on then. Let's quiz it out. What do you think it's worth?
So, to clarify, are you talking about today's money or 2000?
Yes. Just to call back to series one, when we did this with Alan's previous car, that was worth £50, I think, by today.
Really should have bought that.
Yep.
So, I reckon that car is now worth about 1500 quid.
Interesting. What's your take?
Let's go 200.
For a Lexus?
I think it's.
It's old, though. It's old.
I think it's going to be. 3,000 I'm going for.
Wow. I think Tom Dark is the closest. £545.
Wow. Yay!
From today's money.
I'm surprised.
Yep. Also, going back to talking about Lynn's working hours, there's a brilliant bit in the audiobook where after Lynn's mum dies, Alan gives her 36 hours off, but those 36 hours are not to be taken consecutively and have to be taken in 3-hour chunks.
Flexi grief.
Over the next month.
Morning breaks.
So good. At this point, the builders come in. We'll be seeing a lot of them through the series. They're very cordial to Alan at this point. I would say their relationship with Alan in this series is a bit like him and Dave Clifton in the previous one, where it breaks down gradually and it ebbs and flows.
It's a bit of a shame that you see three of them at the beginning and then it kind of just sort of focuses on John?
John.
Yeah.
They must be sick to death of him as well. They have to tolerate and listen to his...
I enjoy him just trying to bond with them, like trying to talk about football and just saying, yeah, cool. He has no idea.
Did you see the match? Which one?
Don't know. Was it the tallest of the three builders that you don't really see much of again? I think there might be a reason for that, because in the commentary they say that a lot of the actors, especially him, didn't realise until the night before that it was going to be in front of a live studio audience, and he had quite a big issue with that. He wasn't ready for that. And the pressure, I think. So maybe that's why he didn't appear so much after episode one.
And why his career appears to have stalled slightly.
I've not IMDb'd him. He could be a megastar.
I don't think he is.
Okay. Alan tells Lynn at this point, technically your life isn't worth insuring. Oh no, that's brilliant. The best part is just before that when he's like, no offence. And she's like, oh, none taken. He's like, well, you don't know what I'm going to say yet. then there's literally no way to not take offence to what he does say. Brilliant. Around this point, we find out that his girlfriend is 33, which is my age. Cashback.
Anyone else?
I was going to say, was Cashback new in 2003? Is that why he's using that? Because it's like a modern reference?
No, you see, I think what they've tried to do here, and this is something I have a slight issue with in this series, I think they're trying to come up with these short kind of one word or very short phrase punchlines to get kind of easy laughs.
Yeah.
Because of the success of Jurassic Park.
Yeah, it feels like they're just trying to recreate that Jurassic Park moment from series one.
So, for example,
you have things like Jack and Akinori, Back of the Net, Spice World, Cashback. And I just think some of them, you just think, why would he say that? Mm. Why would he say Spice World? That's the most ridiculous one, I think.
Quite good, though.
I don't know. I mean, I guess equally, you could say the same thing about when he says Jurassic Park, but I think that just became such a defining moment of that first series, and it just feels like very much like they're trying to recreate that here.
Yep. He then goes straight into sex talk. Probably one of the most grotesque sentences of the series is when he talks about how occasionally he does venture south on his girlfriend Sonia.
A bit weird.
Yeah.
A bit awkward.
Has any of you heard the term gemball before?
The what?
Say it again.
Gemball.
No.
It's basically a term that's kind of become prominent recently for sort of creepy, weird men who use like a sort of medieval style language to ingratiate themselves with women and with people, you know, kind of like, oh, forsooth, my good sir, you know, all that kind of shit. I wonder if Alan is the original Jemble. It sort of feels like it from this doth venture south. And also,
Alan's trying to chat up the builders by
no, but you know, just trying to make yourself seem like non-threatening, cutesy, sort of like by using all this like weird medieval terms for things. I doth venture south, and when I do, it's a breath of fresh air.
So what, you could in a bar, you could use kind of sexy medieval talk to get a woman to.
Well, I think the idea is that's what Jembles try to do.
I've never heard of that.
It is a thing. I can assure
we've
you.
We've all learned something new today.
I believe, yeah, Alan
whether
Partridge,
we wanted to know
potentially
that or not,
the original Jemble. So Sonia enters at this point, 11 minutes into the episode. The only note that the actress was given was clarity.
The actress? She has got a name.
Amelia Bullmore, is that right?
Question, did anyone... Okay, you don't know. Did anyone know her name before starting researching this? Because every time she pops up in something, and she's in loads of things. She's in Happy Valley, Poirot, Sherlock, and every time she...
What great shows.
You've also missed three very important shows, Big Train, Brass Eye and Jam.
All of those.
Dream.
But every time she pops up in something new, it's always just like, oh, there's Sonia from Partridge. And I never knew her name.
Bit of background, she actually went to the Ukraine in order to train to get that accent.
Yep.
Such I think her accent is good, but not much better than good.
Alan?
I mean, it's caricatured for comedy, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's quite... Yeah. I also think that's you need
to. Do you really need to travel to the Ukraine and spend time there to do an accent which is so much of a kind of cartoonised version of
if
it?
If the BBC are going to pay for it.
And yeah, remember, Eastern Europe wasn't part of Europe, as it is now.
Politics news there.
We'll save it for the Brexit podcast.
Political Partridge.
She addresses the builders as builders, but everyone else by name, which are like, hello, Alan. Hello, builders. could you have a Sonia character in 2016? Do you think it would work now?
Or
do you think
this
is obvious time?
I think it could work. Yeah. I'm not sure you could caricature it to quite the level they have here, but...
I don't think it's offensive.
No.
I mean, the main reason I asked that is I noticed, this is my fault as an audience member as much as anything, but there are laughs at her accent before she's even made a joke.
But is that because the joke is, obviously, Alan's got a girlfriend and she's from Eastern Europe? That's kind of...
Yeah, I guess so.
In fact, isn't there an episode where... Yeah, later in the series...
What,
when he's
British?
Talking to Mike, yeah, exactly.
No chance.
He knows he's got no chance of getting a British girlfriend, so he's got to outsource to Eastern Europe.
So Sonia tells her funny coffee story. My question is, could that story and the different circumstances told by a different person, could it have been funny? Did it have the potential to be funny? About
what, that a man was smelly?
No, it was a smelly man. He was a smelly man came in. I mean, I presume she means a homeless person or something along those lines.
Yeah.
So a smelly man comes in and asks if they had any coffee and they pretended they didn't, even though they're a coffee shop. Could that story have been funny? Or is
no,
it,
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. No.
I think in the right hands it might have been mildly humorous, but Sonia has extracted all the funny out of it, which is similar to one of our iTunes reviews.
Can't really argue with it, to be fair. So.
No, got to write.
This is when Alan uses another great line. Guess which one of you ladies I'm going to make love to now. Lynn looks horrified, but is it because it's bawdy or is it because she wishes it was her?
No, I think, first off, it's obviously offensive.
We
touched on series one that there might have been something there between Lynn and Alan. I feel by this point she has moved on. She's still happy to, you know, work with Alan, but any affection... like that has very much been rescinded.
And as we know, she has a love interest towards the end of the series, so
exactly.
She's on the prowl.
Yeah.
And is it possible that Lynn hates Sonia anyway? So it's just the mere idea of Alan and Sonia being a partnership. I don't know. But
maybe she's also buoyed by the fact that she has got her mum's money. It's a new chapter. She's moving on.
She's bounced back.
Yes. Maybe that's the joke.
Interesting.
Oh, wow, have we uncovered something here? I mean, it's about time we did, wasn't it?
So, Alan to Sonia, let's be appalling. And then there's a great visual gag where he sticks his head out the caravan window.
His face when he ducks out of the window is just ridiculous.
Taking off his trousers as he goes. Also, we learn that he likes to shower before and after sex. Very important.
Nice. Very hygienic, Alan. Well done.
Yep, he does get clammy. I think we move to choristers at this point, don't we?
We do. I was just going to quickly check, because this was the first scene we had all three builders in, without referring to any notes or any internet, can you name all three builders?
No.
One.
Would anybody like to give it a go?
John.
Yep, we've got John.
Dan.
No.
Mike.
Keith.
No. Steve.
No.
This is great.
You're just saying names.
So the three builders are John,
Tony,
Carl, and Ditch.
Ditch.
That is a thing.
We never hear Ditch. We do hear Carl, to be fair.
Yeah, Carl features a bit.
But I don't think we ever hear the name Ditch, do we? When's Ditch?
Where do you get that from?
The scripts.
Fair enough.
I'm not made it up. I've done a research.
I'm not saying made up. Why are you saying made up?
Shall we go to Coristers?
Yes, we're at Coristers now. Stephen Taylor is the manager of Coristers. There is a Stephen Taylor in real life who is a chorister at Eton Choral Choruses.
Good to know.
Also, from the audiobook, did you know that there are three other choristers in the franchise?
Get out of town.
There's one in Bristol, your hometown, Adam. Chester and Stansted Airport.
Amazing.
The best of all the airports there.
So Lynn and the lady from Meteor Video, it seems to have been sitting in silence for some time waiting for Alan to arrive.
Yeah, it doesn't look like there's been great small talk happening there. It just looks like it's all been quite
but
awkward.
There's no great small talk when he gets there as well, because he's had to have a shower. He gets a bit clammy. Yeah.
And did you notice when Alan arrives, it looks like Lynn is expecting a kiss from him, and she looks genuinely miffed when she doesn't get it.
And grimaces at the clammy bit.
Also, Alan's clearly walked in, seen little Todd with his jeans, and thought, no, I'm not having that. He's got to go.
He's going.
What, Lynn, Todd? Seriously?
There's some question about the motive behind Lynn's next line when she's talking to the meteor lady and saying, oh, yes, panic attacks have all but stopped. There's some chat on the commentary about whether she's doing this out of any malice or not. I think she almost definitely is, because he's just embarrassed her. But Armando says that he thinks that she's actually doing it from a place of pride. She's proud that Alan's overcome his panic attacks.
I think that seems more like a Lynn action to me, that she kind of thinks it's good to tell people that he's not having panic attacks anymore instead of just not mentioning it at all. Mm.
Can we just go back to Todd for a second?
Small chap of about six.
Wearing jeans. He does say in the audiobook that after several years of lobbying, he managed to get children banned entirely, although there is a heated outhouse for children with a light and running water.
A shed for kids. Coristers is based on a country club near Guildford. Steve Coogan used to go there, apparently. He went there once, and he had a cap on in the bar, and somebody just said, apropos of nothing, hats off in the bar. No, excuse me, sir. No politeness, just hats off in the bar.
Did anybody enjoy Alan's tie in this scene, by the way?
Ooh, don't think I noticed.
Very snazzy pattern. It looks to me like it's snakes and ladders.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah. That is a good tie right there.
Classic dad tie, that.
Yeah.
At this point, we have water sports explained to Alan and Lynn. This is quite a risky gag to include, I think, in a mainstream comedy. I'm not sure I've seen many gags along these lines.
But Adam, what's water sports?
It's when someone pisses and shits on you.
I don't think it's shit, is it? It's just the one, isn't it?
I don't know.
I mean, we've got the internet, there's no experts
around this table, it seems.
Either way, it's disgusting.
I think one of those options is more watery than the other.
That's true. Well, it depends what you've eaten. But the water sports joke is one that grew out of improv. I was going to ask, do you think there's a large percentage of the audience that learned what water sports was from this show? It's become an educational tool.
Maybe, but this was broadcast when the internet wasn't really much of a thing. You didn't have iPads and iPhones, so you wouldn't just jump straight on the internet and Google water sports to see what comes up.
Question. You, Tom and Adam, you've, for the research for this, gone back over the commentaries. Do they talk at any point about how much of this series and script is improvised? Because you just mentioned that came out of it being improvised. Do they ever reference that this part was improvised, or how much of it was improvised?
No, I don't think they kind of really break it down scene by scene like that, but the impression I got is I think they had a basic script, but then they also workshopped improvisations around it as well.
Okay.
Which I think you also feel, I think like that's kind of what happened in the first series as well.
Yeah. I noticed at this point that I reckon I would describe Alan's hair at this point as a mullet.
If you
go back and look at this chorister scene, it's very much party at the back, business up front.
Classic Alan.
Yeah. Then you get a couple of sample names of the Meteor Video Productions. Pitsnade Zoo is probably my favourite.
Yeah, that is brilliant. Also, she's clutching like a handful of VHS tapes, which look massive and rubbish for one. But also, has she just like got softcore porn in choristers just on display? What if little
you're
Todd...
allowed that, but not jeans?
Exactly. What about little
outrageous.
Todd?
Very, very strange. One thing I noticed, just a general point, is that there's a lot more Mancunian in Alan's accent, or in Steve's accent, if you like, this episode than in the previous series. So I wonder if everyone is a bit closer to their real selves. Lynn perhaps looks a little younger than she did in Series 1 as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
I think you find Coogan just slip into a bit more of a Mancunian accent at times in this series. Sometimes you spot it a bit.
Oh, shortly afterwards, they're negotiating on fee. He's trying to negotiate. He's negotiating on his own.
A dreadful negotiator. Yeah. And then they move she up. Completely outmaneuvers him.
Yeah, he's got outmaneuvered by the director of Meteor Videos. they're out in the car and he has a minor crash. He hits the bollard.
Oh, no. You're jumping ahead. Oh, you missed that line where it's just a kind of little throwaway comment that he has to say that he needs to get his head together. Let's go and get a couple of Soleros.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, so they've had a crash. The airbags have exploded in Lynn and Alan's face.
Yep. I was trying to work out what he said as he hit the bollard, because it's not in the script. He sort of goes...
it's an indiscernible word, basically, isn't it?
Yep.
And even at this point, it's not enough to just say to Lynn, are you okay? He needs to criticise the way that she was sat before she's her airbag kind of exploded in her face.
And he's then shouting at her to calm down, which I thought was quite similar to his attempts to relax people
exactly.
And let go.
He says, calm down, Lynn.
You're suffering from minor women's whiplash. Yeah.
Yeah. Felicity Montague did get neck pain from multiple takes of that scene, so he actually did give
again,
her women's whiplash.
Cut.
You were leaning forwards with your handbag like that, crushing like a mouse. He's always calling her something mousy, basically.
I've just checked every ruddy word, so I do know what those words are when he hits the airbag. Mm-hmm. He says, into me!
Oh, I'm all right. Your airbag went off. Why didn't mine?
I'm all right. Not are you okay? I'm all right. You also know that he's not really interested in taking Lynn to the hospital.
No.
He's just going to try to get a couple of Soleros.
And renegotiate his fee. Yeah. Or accept the fee that was already on the table.
Yeah.
About 20 minutes into this episode, Lynn's mistaken for his wife again, which is a recurring theme.
Yeah, I love that. That's brilliant.
Yep. I believe we're now at school, where he bumps into old schoolmate, not really a mate, Phil Wiley, who he then has a sort of argument with about who's having a better life.
It's a passive-aggressive exchange about who's doing better than... But it seems like Phil just kind of isn't really bothered by it, whereas Alan is genuinely trying to outdo him.
Yeah.
And he's like... I've got a wife.
Absolutely.
That's just what's happened in my life. I'm not trying to outdo you. I'm just married.
It's just what's happened.
It's just what's happened.
I have a question about this scene. So Lynn is with Alan and she has a massive scarf on. Now, is that scarf hiding some kind of neck brace? Because it looks massive and a bit weird.
That would make sense, yeah.
Yeah. But they never actually reference
been,
it.
That would have been funny if Lynn was a neck brace. That would have actually been really funny.
Yeah. Mm. I'd say if you look at the scarf, it just looks a bit strange. So I wonder if there was a bit more... A development in the story that didn't make it to the final edit, perhaps.
Quite possibly, yeah.
We'll never know.
He's giving his speech to the class. Amongst that, he manages to reveal that Fernando has was privately educated, very much the Tom Stab of Alan Partridge. And that UK Conquest has 8,000 viewers, so it seems unlikely that that's behind his six-figure salary.
Whilst I also appreciate that the kids are clearly actors, they do look visibly bored.
Another thing that comes up at this point is that he announces to the class his frustration at having been caned for allegedly drawing a chalk penis on his own back, saying that it's impossible. So we're going to put that to the test now, don some temporary t-shirts and try and draw chalk penises on our own backs. Obviously, this visual gag is podcast gold, so do bear with us, but we're going to put a picture of all of them up on the social media, and we would love to know who you think did the best job of it.
Let's find out.
Okay, so we've now got our matching t-shirts and pieces of chalk ready. We're all going to try and attempt to draw a chalk penis on our own backs, starting with Nick Older. Let's see how he gets on. Oh, he started quite low on the back. He's done the first ball. Oh, it's not bad. I mean, the second ball has gone right off to the side. It looks... wow. It's all gone horrible. It was doing quite well, but it's gone very wrong. Okay, we're going to move on to Tom Stab. Tom Stab's having a go now. He's hopefully learned from some of Nick's mistakes, of which there were many. He's struggling to get purchase on the t-shirt. Okay, he's begun. It's I noticed they're all veering off to the right. Okay, he's just completing the second ball. No, it seems to be wearing a hat, and I think it's been shot. On to Tom Dark. Tom Dark's now doing the third one. We will obviously put all of these on the social media, our social networks on Twitter, at The Partridge Pod, and facebook.com/ThePartridgePod. Tom Dark has now finished his. It's terrible. I'll pass the mic over and I'll do my own.
Okay. Right, Adam, let's see what you can do. It's a confident start.
It is.
Ooh. Oh, it's quite low down. He has practiced. Oh, no, maybe he hasn't. Right, well, we'll post the results of those on our Facebook and our Twitter page. I don't think the results are good for any of us, to be honest.
Okay, so thank you very much to Connor J. Ford on Facebook for suggesting that chalk penis challenge. We look forward to finding out who the winner is, or loser. I mean,
we're all losers.
If you win that, you've still lost in a way, haven't you? Really?
Yeah, none of us are winning. But we will. We'll post. We've got a bit of a video of that, and we'll also post photos of all of our t-shirts. And leave a comment and vote for the best t-shirt.
The Crash Bang Wallop What a Video obviously shows Alan at his most grotesque. And he's obviously, it's in the intervening years where he's put on a lot of weight, been on a Toblerone binge.
More importantly than all of that, it cuts to obviously the shot of the TV. Did anyone clock what the brand of TV was?
No.
It falls into the budget category of TVs that we were chuckling about in series one.
Not Alba.
Well, that was stereo, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, but you know, it's an umbrella term for technology.
if you say so.
But there was one that we missed, and it's this brand of TV.
Sanyo.
Put us out of our misery.
Any more guesses?
Polaroid. Just a bit of backstory here. Adam once owned a Polaroid television
once,
made by
he's
Polaroid.
Still got it. In Bristol.
10 years faithful service that's given me.
Well, fair enough.
Matsui.
Oh, lovely Matsui.
I forgot about Matsui. I used to have a Matsui TV.
2002, I hadn't forgot about it.
For this, and I think in the series in general, that Steve initially didn't look old enough. They put aging stuff on him, and they had to keep adding more and more, which is perhaps why he's...
Well, as discussed, perhaps they added too much.
Exactly. There's a lot of good names in the Crash Bang Wallop Porter video credits. My personal favourite is Bunty Leavitt. and then obviously that talk goes horrifically wrong. He ends up being reprimanded by his old headmaster. That scene was almost cut, actually, where Frank Raphael's getting in a strop with him.
I think you could probably lose.
And we were talking about those little throwaway gags that that they seem to pepper this series with, and this one is probably the one that gets the biggest laugh. I think that see you in Strasbourg. It does get quite a big laugh on the
arguably slightly earlier in this, Alan being at the school, you've got back of the net. which is still one of those very short, impactful phrases. But I think I'll allow that one. That one's good.
Back of the net has actually sort of become one of the most popular ones.
Yeah.
Do you think back of the net is the monkey tennis of this series? Mm. I think it probably is.
Could we have called it back of the net? The Alan? I think we probably could, yeah.
Yeah, we could have done. We'd have got more football subscribers, I suppose.
Yeah, people have got
Frank Raphael saying, I wish you sweated over your work like I sweated over mine. Alan doesn't because he uses Lynx Africa, which I thought was a lovely touch.
The first mention of Lynx Africa in the series, but not the only one.
I assume we all used Lynx Africa at one point in our lives.
Oh, God, yeah.
I regularly used Lynx for quite a while, which I'm ashamed to say.
Is anyone still using Lynx deodorant around the table?
No.
Although they are
going through a big rebrand at the moment.
Are they? Although, Nick, don't you favour a woman's deodorant normally anyway?
I did go through a phase of using women's deodorant. Dove is superb. And then they brought out a range for men, which I discovered when we were living together in Tooting, and genuinely I've never broken from. I think that's been about 7 years now. Although, news just in last week, they changed, they updated the flavour. Or musk, whatever you want to call it. The scent. It's not as good anymore. I'll still buy it, though.
He is brand loyal.
More news on Nick's hygiene routine as it breaks.
Well, to be honest, Nick, you've just talked about Dove deodorant for about a minute, so hopefully they'll send you some.
Yep.
Lifetime supply.
So. Please do. There was a line in this scene that was cut where Frank Raphael says, there's nothing wrong with the 1900s, and then Alan says, yes, there is. It was ages ago.
That's a good gag.
Yeah. That is a really good gag.
I think we're then back in the BP garage,
where
there's an implication that Michael's already assaulted a customer.
So he's been told.
He's been told he's not allowed to fight.
I've been told.
Yep. He also has a conversation about Beachy Head with Alan, where he mistakes Starbucks as the suicide hotspot rather than Beachy Head. It's very funny.
He calls Michael a chicken again in this scene, doesn't he?
Like he did in series
one. Yeah.
Chicken stock.
Chicken stock. this is the point where the teacher
Phil comes back in.
Quick, before we get onto the arena of conflict, quick thing: the actor playing Phil came back every week to do minor reshoots, but sometimes just for a drink, which, according to the people on the commentary, was a bit weird for the regulars.
Say that again.
What do you mean?
What, he just come and like hang out on set?
I got the impression it was a bit of a sort of, you know, David Brent and his dog coming back to the office trying to get a meeting situation, which is a bit odd. Also a bit odd that they would happily say that on the public commentary.
He was a big character in Coronation Street, so it wasn't as if he went on to do nothing.
That's right, yeah.
Unless if maybe they were saying that it was some kind of in-joke or something.
Maybe.
We'll never know the truth.
Very odd. Yes, so this is the point where there's a conflict brewing. Alan's weapon of choice is an apple pie. I believe we should point to apple pie specialist Tom Stab for a bit more information about our research in that area.
That's right. As people will have seen from the socials, we put it out. I did the apple pie, I guess apple pie Alan test, really, which was to see whether it is indeed hotter than the sun when you heat an apple pie in the microwave for 8 minutes.
And Tom, the question is, is it hotter than the sun?
Well, unfortunately, it's not. I mean, you can see all the details in the video, so check it out. We've put it on our Facebook. That's the Partridge Pod on Facebook. Alan actually says one thing that I don't mention in the video, that he says the temperature inside the apple pie is 1,000 degrees. How does he know that? I mean, it's not even that. It gets to about 250, as you'll see from the video. But, so he says it's about 1,000 degrees. And either way, one of us is going down.
The thing is, 1,000 degrees. How hot does the sun get? I think it's more than that.
It's 5,504 Celsius.
Right, yeah.
Okay. And also, you may see from the video, I did have to do that experiment twice because the first time I panicked after it set off my fire alarm in my house.
Going to great lengths to get to the truth for you, the loyal Monkey Tennis listener.
We do this for you guys.
He's got a few terrible insults in this scene. He starts insulting the teacher with Twix up the bum. We also find out
he'd have to break into another packet, and he's not willing to do that.
Exactly, yeah. But then he realises that he has got a radio show to present, so he has to make nice. And I think he ends up offering him £200, doesn't he, to let
just
him
that is correct. To get out, just to go away,
or a cheque for £230.
Yeah.
The other thing that's worth mentioning before we get to the credits of this episode is the fact that Lynn clearly doesn't know what a penis looks like. You see what she's drawn on his back, and as Alan says, it looks like a mouse's head.
there's a bit of backstory about Lynn on the commentary that might help to explain this. They say that these are some facts about Lynn that I learned. She once got drunk on brandy. She only ever saw her father's genitalia. And he once caught her wearing makeup and threw a bucket of water over her face. And during Alan's breakdown between the two series, she found him in the bath and had to break in. There we go.
Oh, Lynn's had it tough.
So now we come to the credits, which I believe are they double as Meteor Films Scum on the Run.
Yes.
So he got his way with the title, because earlier on he suggested Scum on the Run. Yep. We didn't hear if they'd gone for it, but they have. The crash test airbag bit at the end is not only a bit creepy,
but ages as well.
It's very weird.
It looks very much like Coogan rather than Alan, the reaction, I thought. It didn't seem like there was a lot of acting happening in that part.
It's a bit odd. It's not adding a great deal, is it?
Yeah. The actress that played the policewoman taking down
the sexy WPC.
That's right. Yeah. She went on to win an international modelling contract.
Off the back of that.
I doubt that featured on the show, really.
Okay.
A couple of other little bits about this episode. At the end of all of the credits of this series, there's a bbc.co.uk/partridge URL that has now died. you'll get no facts from that. Anything else in this episode?
Yeah. Has anyone else noted the IMDb scores of the episodes in this series?
No, I haven't looked at that.
I've done for this one. This averages an 8.3 out of 10 on IMDb, which is the joint lowest for this for this episode. So I guess the question is, what does everyone think of this episode in general as a start to the series?
I genuinely think this is one of the best.
Yeah, I think it's.
I think, like the first series of first episode of series one, there's a lot of reintroducing to do, and I think they do it in a very natural way.
Mm.
It was a couple of other facts as well. It was broadcast originally on the 11th of November 2002, and its rating was 15. Mm. Probably because of the water sports. I don't know.
Maybe.
So that's pretty much it for episode one of series two of I'm Alan Partridge and of Monkey Tennis. But before we go, we're going to play a quick game of Cards Against Alanity. If everyone can gather their cards. The way this works is that we have a number of phrases from the second series of I'm Alan Partridge. Each episode, I read out an incomplete sentence. We try and complete it as best we can. And producer Jed is going to ping his bell, which sounds like this, when he hears his favourite. The winner of last series was Nick, so there's everything to play for. So this time, the phrase that you'll be completing is, occasionally, I dost venture south, and let me tell you, when I do, it's like blank. So we'll give everybody a few seconds to pick out the best that they've got. I'll pass them over to Jed. There we go.
This is tough.
It's very tough.
Oh, I picked the wrong one.
No.
Can I change?
No, it's too late now, Nick.
Yep. As last season's victor, you should know better. Okay. Really got to press you for a decision, Tom Dark. Dead air is a crime.
No dead air. Everything is good.
Jed, have you had a good look at them all? Okay, so let me read them out one by one. Occasionally, I dost venture south, and let me tell you, when I do, it's like splashdown for Lynn. Occasionally, I dost venture south, and let me tell you, when I do, it's like Lynx Africa. Occasionally, I dost venture south, and let me tell you, when I do, it's like a Dr. Pepper from the cooler. Occasionally, I dost venture south, and let me tell you, when I do, it's like 10 firemen or a dozen policemen.
Yes! I'm in the lead!
Tom Dark's the first winner. So, that's Cards Against Alanity, and that's this episode of Monkey Tennis. Join us next week when we're going to be talking about The Colour of Alan. Alan really is on the up, but Dante's Fire is just around the corner. You can get in touch with us on Twitter, at ThePartridgePod, Facebook.com/ThePartridgePod, and Gmail, it's ThePartridgePod@gmail.com. From all of us, thanks so much for listening again, and we will see you next week. From Monkey Tennis, goodbye!
Goodbye!
Woo! Monkey Tennis is a post-pop podcast produced by Jed Shepherd. The artwork's by Dave McNamara, and the theme is an excerpt of the Black Beauty theme, Galloping Home, by Dennis King. To find out more about the records and podcasts made by Post-Pop, head to postpoprecords.com.
Monkey Tennis?
Damn!
Monkey Tennis?
Little piece my foot of a spy.
Monkey Tennis?
Go to London, I guarantee you'll either be mugged or not appreciated.
Monkey Tennis?
Damn!
Monkey Tennis? On the whole, a very good effort, 7/10.
It's hotter than the sun!
Back of the net. Monkey Tennis?
Yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.